another reason to suppress ovulation is it's tough to grow a baby and feed one at the same time. So that keeps us from doing that. But when you're suppressing ovulation, you may not have a period. Or your period might just be delayed, because if you're not ovulating, your body doesn't know it's time for a period.
Hi, I'm Sarah Kuhn. Welcome to the Juno Women Podcast, where I sit down for candid conversations with women who are experts in their field and share their specific knowledge so that we can become better equipped to handle all things motherhood. Juno Women is an extension of Juna, a fitness and nutrition app created to help guide you through your trying to conceive, pregnancy, and motherhood journey. Everything we do at Juna is designed to empower and support you through one of the most incredible and challenging times of your life. Today, I'm talking to Nicole Williams, an OBGYN who specializes in women's health issues. Her credentials are impeccable and too long to name in this intro, but make sure to check the show notes for more info on Nicole. We mostly talk about the vagina and the surrounding areas, how it changes during pregnancy and postpartum, what's normal, what's not, and how to stay healthy down there during motherhood. I hope you enjoy. Nicole, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's my pleasure.
Why don't you start by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you, your profession, and your area of expertise?
My name is Dr. Nicole Williams. I am a board certified OBGYN. I've been in practice more than 15 years now. Right now, I focus my practice primarily on pelvic floor disorders, sexual pain, fibroids, endometriosis, anything to do with the vagina, the lower genital tract organs, any issues there, that is where we focus.
Are most of your women postpartum, or are you seeing the gambit?
We see the gambit. So okay. We see women from planning for pregnancy, postpartum, many years post-pregnancy, having issues after that. So we got a little bit of everything, and that's what I enjoy most about the practice.
Okay. And you also wrote a book, right?
I did. And we actually do discuss postpartum changes. Okay. The book is called This Is How You Vagina, all about the vagina and why you probably shouldn't call it that. It's a humorous yet detailed discussion about all things to do with anybody born with a vagina.
Got it.
So we go from talk about bloody vaginas with periods. We talk about birthing vaginas. There's a whole chapter on that. We talk about menopausal vaginas too. So we touch a little bit on all the different cycles of quote unquote vagina.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get into the postpartum vagina, because I know for me, I would have loved like untethered access to an OB to ask the millions of questions that I had from like the 0 days postpartum after birth all the way through. I have an 18-month-old baby right now, but thank you. I'm like, he's my third. He's my last one. but the vaginal changes are just so significant, especially in that first year. And then like when you get your first period back. So I'll even go as far as 18 months, that just so many changes are happening. And so I'm going to ask you a lot of questions. How does that sound?
I'm excited.
Okay. So in the early postpartum, like first few days, like what is to be expected of my vagina? Like what's happening? What has just happened? What's going on?
First of all, keep in mind, if you have a regular size baby, and we're talking anywhere between 4 and 7 pounds, generally your vagina is made for this. We know your vagina is made for this. It's made to stretch almost 10 times its regular diameter during the birthing process. Now, of course, immediately postpartum, while you're in the hospital or you're sitting around breastfeeding your baby, learning who your baby is in those first few critical days, your vagina is starting to try to involute itself, but it's not an instant process. And especially imagine what if you did have a larger kid, you had to have an instrument delivery. So there's different things. So we can break it down into bits. First bit, normal vaginal birth, 6-pound baby, generally you're going to be sore. You might have a little skid mark, we call it, just a tiny little tear, maybe around the urethra where the urine's coming out, maybe around the perineum. So maybe urinating or going to poop might be a little bit of a challenge. It might be a little uncomfortable. So just know, I usually would recommend some witch hazel for that. Like they have these little witch hazel pads, which are really comforting. It's the same ones they have for constipation. They're called Tux. That's the brand name. Like, they probably have witch hazel pads or anything. Those are so soothing. And then they also give you an ice pack in the hospital, usually. So don't be afraid. The ice pack is useful. 15 on, 10 off, especially if you had a longer birth and you have a little bit of swelling down there. So you might have some swelling too. So this is all normal. If you had an instrument delivery, you had to have an episiotomy, or if you had to have a tear, if you tore, then that's a different story. So of course, I actually talk about it in the book, and I have illustrations of the different types of tears that you can have during a birth, and they go from 1 until 4. Most people have a 2. So we'll just talk about that. Was that okay?
Yep, that was what I had, 2 twos.
So if you had a second degree, we call it perineal laceration. That's the spot between your vagina and your anus. It goes maybe about 1 inch or so down. And your physician has been trained to be able to repair that. And also keep in mind, this area is meant to be a little bit damaged, and it's okay, because even if we didn't do anything, it'll probably heal back up. It might scar a little bit more, but it might heal. It would probably heal back up. But in those first few days, you may not want to sit down because it's really almost exquisitely tender. Danger things to look for. Now, you're going to have some discharge, of course, and that's just a little mix of blood and fluid and everything from your delivery. And of course, the uterus is coming down, so there's going to be a little blood coming out of there too. These things are generally okay. It's if it becomes really foul smelling, or if that area where the tear was with the repair is really tender, like out of proportion, you should still be able to sit. But if you can't sit at all, then perhaps you should bring that to the attention of your delivering physician. Hey, this is really painful. Or if you have a fever or anything like that, it could be from that incision. It could also be from the uterus. So there's a lot of different warning signs to keep in mind. I know that you really want to pay attention to your baby. It's a brand new person you have in your life, which is amazing. But remember, when you're in the airplane and they say you put your mask on first before you help others, that is actually the best thing to do. So if you're not feeling quite right in those first few days, you feel like, huh, your body's trying to tell you something, tell your doctor.
Okay. That's good to know. And so how much bleeding can we expect? And it's Loki. It's Lochia, right?
Is Lochia.
Okay.
L-O-C-H-I. That's the bleeding that you get postpartum. How much can we expect? It's usually kind of like a light period.
Okay.
And it shouldn't be red. It's usually red for a day or so, but not breathtakingly bright red. That tells us that's very fresh blood.
Okay.
What we want is blood that is starting to turn a little bit into serum.
Okay.
So it's going to be reddish at first, and that's Loki red. It turns to white Loki. So you're in between like red, yellow, sometimes a little bit of brown, white, and then it goes away. So it's usually like a light period. Of course, you're going to use a pad, no tampons at this point, because your vagina just did this amazing thing. So we're going to leave her be for a little bit. So the longest I've ever seen anybody really have that go, like a month.
Yeah.
But by then it's so light and it's just panty liner kind of situation. Yeah, all that's within normal. Now, if you're bleeding and you're going through a pad an hour, or you're tired, you're not feeling quite right, that could be another sign that maybe your uterus didn't clamp down all the way, or even if you're out of the hospital, it could have. Sometimes the uterus doesn't clamp down as it should. And if it loosens up a little bit, there's more blood vessels there. So you're going to bleed more.
Okay.
That could be another reason to make a call to your doctor.
Okay. And is it true that, because I feel like I remember with one of my babies, like after a week, I was like, oh, I'm feeling good. I'm going to go for a longer walk. And so I did a longer walk, and then the bleeding kind of kicked up again. And is that normal? Is that basically my body saying you're doing too much too soon?
Yes, it's normal, but it probably was a sign that your body is like, you're probably doing a little much there.
Okay.
And we want to, you're feeling okay, but it was probably a sign to kind of scale back a little bit. And then when you rested, did the bleeding get better?
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, I remember being like, oh, this is a fascinating thing that like my body is literally like telling me, slow down. Slow.
The body of people who are born female and are able to do this super amazing thing, we do tend to take it for granted, but it really does give us all sorts of clues as to what's exactly going on. And you start to feel it. You knew.
Yes.
Probably go back and have a seat. And then you did, and things got better. So
yeah,
that is just another wonderful thing about these bodies that we have, that people who are born women.
Yep. Yep. Now, I'm curious how many times you get this, but I made the very large mistake of looking at my vagina because I thought that I busted a stitch when I was pooping for the first time, which was the most traumatic thing in the world. And so I looked at my vagina, which was also then very traumatic because I was like, I can't make heads or tails. Where is it? This just looks like minced meat.
Mush. It looked like mush. Yeah.
So that was 7 or 8 days postpartum.
Okay.
And I'm curious, like, I never looked at my vagina again with my subsequent babies because I was like, I know that by 6 weeks she was totally back to normal. We're fine. But like, I guess like it, which by the way is the most incredible thing about the human body. You're like, this thing just went through all of this and then it just went back to normal.
Yeah, it really can. So I do advise my patients, like you said, you looked because you thought you'd pop a stitch.
Yeah, it's fine.
But I did preface to my patients when I was doing deliveries, hey, she's not going to quite look the same. There's going to be a lot of swelling.
Yeah.
Because you put a lot of pressure on that area and the veins are going to, they're playing catch up. The veins are responsible for draining fluid. And if you put a lot of pressure on them over time, the little valves in the veins to help bring the blood up, they're going to suffer a little bit. So the fluid's going to sit down in that area because of all the pressure that you put. Eventually your body, everything will start moving again. And that's why that pressure goes down, because usually the labia minora and the labia majora can be like twice the size of what you're not used to seeing. And you're like, what the heck was that? Just know that's a fluid shift.
Okay.
As you move around, you just keep your feet up. If you're relaxing, make sure to keep your feet up. Try not to sit like we're normally sitting after postpartum. Keep your feet up. That's going to help the circulation and that'll help the swelling go down.
And how long does the swelling typically last?
Usually it's anywhere up to 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
The first I've ever seen is like at 8 weeks, they still had a little bit of swelling and that had to do with weight. That patient I think was hypertensive. So she was probably retaining a little bit more salt. So there's little factors that go into that.
Okay.
But generally 4 to 6 weeks, we can start to make sure that swelling's going down.
We're going to take a quick break so I can tell you about the Juna app, the app that makes this podcast possible. Juna is the premier app for every stage of motherhood, with a 12-week trying to conceive plan and workouts, key nutrition information for every week of pregnancy and postpartum, plus 6 full video courses on birth prep, breastfeeding, newborn care, infant sleep, sleep from 4 to 12 months, and starting solids. The app is designed to be your number one companion from trying to conceive through your baby's first year of life. It also includes daily diaphragmatic breathing exercises, pelvic floor prep, daily tips and notes from me that are relevant to the exact things you are experiencing. These are so helpful for easing any fears and preventing the dreaded gestational Google mania, that sickness where you can't stop Googling every little thing that happens during pregnancy. Juna is available for both iOS and Android. Just search Juna in the App Store or go to juna.co. Again, that's juna.co. The app is completely free to try for 7 days, and if you decide it's not right for you, you can cancel anytime within the first week, no questions asked. Download Juna today and get started. Now, back to the show.
Okay, that's helpful. And then I'm curious, because you talked a little bit about pressure, and we will often get questions, which obviously we're not qualified to answer, so we do not. But I get questions about pelvic organ prolapse a lot, because I think I remember with my first baby, I was like, oh, like I'm feeling a lot of pressure. Could that be what that is? So I guess, what are the signs of pelvic organ, like of a prolapse, a wreck? I know that there's several kinds of prolapse. So yeah, just if you want to.
So there's 3 major kinds of prolapse. There's a cystocele, a rectocele, and then a uterine prolapse, where the uterus itself. So the reason that this happens is because the pelvic floor has become weakened. Pregnancy alone, you know, carrying a very large little bowling ball baby on all these muscle groups for several months can actually weaken what we call the pelvic floor. And the ligaments that hold the uterus in place during pregnancy and delivery. And then unfortunately, we don't know who's more at risk for prolapse all the time and who's less at risk for prolapse. That's why we know that if your mom had this problem, you might have this problem. Mm. But if your mom did it and you have a kid who's not 9 pounds, not 8 pounds, like anywhere between 4 and 7 pounds, a reasonably sized baby, then you're not as much at risk for prolapse. Now, we do know there is a certain lifetime risk, which is relatively low. But the signs of prolapse, so the signs of prolapse are you'll actually feel some kind of heaviness down below. Now, if you just delivered a baby,
you're going to feel heavy.
So keep in mind, this is outside of that 2-month window. So these are things you're feeling outside of that window. If you feel a bulge at your introitus, if you are...
What's your introitus?
Oh, that's just the opening of your vagina.
Sorry. Okay. No, yeah. Great.
So you feel where the opening of your vagina is, you stick 2 fingers there and you don't have to go in to feel something.
Mm.
That could actually be either one of 2 things. It could be one of 3. It could be the bladder pooching down. It could be the rectum pooching in, or it could be the cervix, which is the thing that dilated and went down when you have your baby. That could actually be coming down too. So those are the big ones. And people just this general heaviness. Sometimes people do have some pain down below, or they'll actually feel a bulge. Now, the studies do tell us that most people can have a grade 1 prolapse, which is very light, and be completely fine. We recommend doing some pelvic floor exercises, something that's going to help you to strengthen all those muscles down there. But it won't really bother you so much until it starts to really come out.
Okay.
Then that's when you want to talk with your doctor, you want to talk with your gynae, talk with a urogyn, and see what things that we could do. And those things could be, oh my God, I'm going on and on. I'm so sorry.
No.
Some of those things could be, pelvic floor therapy is my favorite thing that is in Europe. It's when you have a baby, standard. You get pelvic floor therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think. But we're in America, it isn't. But I do recommend if my patients do have that kind of coverage, it really helps to re-strengthen and retrain those muscles so then you're not leaking later on in life. So then you don't get a prolapse. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's not a possibility, you can do your own exercises at home. I talk about a few of them, and this is how you vagina. There's pelvic lifts, there's downward dog, there's regular old Kegel muscle exercises. But so there's a few things that you can do at home on your own, or even Kegel balls, those little mm-hmm. things that you exercise all these muscles to help to decrease your risk of prolapse. So we got to get creative over here. And that's what I do for all my patients.
Yeah. Okay. That's helpful. So let's talk about vaginal dryness. Cause I remember at my 6-week appointment, which is traditionally you get approval to exercise again or to resume sex, which feels like it's steeped a little bit in. I'm like, that's not what I'm thinking about right now.
Right. It really isn't. Yeah.
I don't. I'm going to just go ahead and wait a little longer. But anyway, I remember like my OB was like, just letting you know you're nursing, your vagina is going to be very dry. You may want to use lube when you have sex. What is the cause of that?
One of the causes of the vaginal dryness is your hormones.
Okay.
So there's hormones and stimulation. So the main hormone, oxytocin, that's made. That's one of the ones that will help, not help, but that's one of the hormones that's produced, as well as prolactin. Both of these work in concert to help you actually make the milk to feed your baby. Unfortunately, and I think there might be a physiologic reason behind that too, because if you have vaginal dryness secondary to these hormone shifts that you have, you're less likely to have sex and conceive another child. You're still trying to breastfeed the one you have.
Makes sense.
So we know that it's ideal, of course, nobody lives in an ideal world, to space your children out anywhere between 1 year to 18 months, if you can. And I really think that if you breastfeed that year, you might be a little dry that year, so you'd be less likely to have sex and then less likely to have 2 kids at the same time. It's hard to be pregnant with one and breastfeeding another. It's a lot on the spot. Even though these bodies are amazing and they do all this great stuff, it's a really major drain on you to try to feed one and grow another. So that's my little Darwin theory about why you do have this vaginal dryness. But now we do know it's just primarily hormone shifts.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes total sense. I'm curious about vaginal discharge after pregnancy, because it feels like that changes.
It might.
Yeah.
Yeah, your discharge actually might change because bacteria in your vagina might change.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And depending on which bacteria are hanging out in your vagina, your quality, quantity, and the manner in which the discharge comes out, whether it's thick or thin, that might actually change. Mm-hmm. Now, why did the bacteria change? Hormones again, because you're breastfeeding, your diet might change, your sleep patterns are going to change. And we know that whatever you put in is going to come out. And if we're not eating as well, then it's going to be more difficult to keep the happy bacteria in our guts, which keep the happy bacteria in our vaginas. Additionally, it just could be a normal shift. Like some people, after they've had a baby, their periods change a little bit and it's still okay. Same thing with the discharge. As long as it's not malodorous or so much where it's draining out, that again, you're wearing more than a panty liner, that should be worked up. Or if it's like a lot, or if it smells absolutely terrible, then absolutely let somebody know.
Yeah. Yeah. While you brought it up, I want to talk about how your period changes postpartum as well.
Now, if you're breastfeeding, you're suppressing ovulation, and that's why your period might be irregular. Another reason to suppress ovulation is it's tough to grow a baby and feed one at the same time. So that keeps us from doing that. But when you're suppressing ovulation, you may not have a period. Or your period might just be delayed, because if you're not ovulating, your body doesn't know it's time for a period. So yeah, it might make your period a little bit strange. Now, even if you're not breastfeeding, it sometimes can take a couple, three cycles for your body to get back into the rhythm of ovulation. Now, I have had more than one patient who's had lopia, and they were done with it, and the period never came back, and they showed up pregnant.
Oh.
Right.
I have a friend that did that too.
we all know somebody where that happened to them. They're like, oh my God, I didn't even think about it. Because you can still ovulate during that time. Therefore, I do tell my patients that chunk of time right after you've delivered, that month to 2 months, is please either you, if you're gonna do it, there shouldn't be a pull and pray. You gotta really do something, because you just never know when you've ovulated and then poof, you're pregnant again, just like that.
I want to take a quick second to tell you a little about the Core Restore program that's part of the Juna app. If you have a mom pooch, lower back pain, pelvic pain, urinary incontinence, balance issues, or just generally feel like you can't regain your strength and your core, then Core Restore is for you. The Core Restore program was developed by Katie Hunter to help you safely and correctly heal your pelvic floor issues. These are the same moves she works on with me in her office that I pay a pretty penny for per session. You can get it all in the app as part of your subscription, and your first 7 days are free. Simply search for Juna in the App Store and download the Juna app to get started today.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are back to back. It's a little tight.
Two of them. They're like, twins, almost like twins.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Painful sex, which I think it's just so sadly common. I remember I had painful sex for 11 months after my first baby and just thought that this was normal.
It was normal. Oh.
And after my second and third, I saw pelvic floor therapists and was so happy that was my experience. But I just can't believe I suffered for 11 months. And I think about the number of women that just, this is my life now. And so can you talk a little bit about that? And then what are some options for them?
First of all, you are not the only one who, after they've had their kid, are just suffer because they think, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. No, it's not supposed to be like that. One of the causes that we believe is responsible for it, it's not just your episiotomy that might play a role. The biggest one is the fact that when your muscles are starting to snap back, it's sometimes they overcompensate. So they go from a normal resting tension to a heightened resting tension.
Yeah.
So your vagina muscles surrounding it, the bulbo cavern, bulbo spongiosis, as well as the transverse perineal body, all of these muscles just kind of overdo it and they over tighten.
Yep.
And so when you try to put a finger, a penis, a toy, a something in there, those muscles, especially down in that area where you had your episiotomy, or if you tore, or this is because this is the most traumatic spot, that area between the perineal area, that's where those muscles are. They over tighten and you try to put something in there. Oh my God, it's going to feel like daggers.
Yep. That's what it felt like.
Yeah. And then sometimes you can even get burning when you're sitting because when the muscles are tight all the time, you know, they feel the burn. If you're exercising a lot, you release lactic acid and that burns. Same thing with these muscles. If you're tightening them all the time, it's going to burn. So I tell my patients all that this is your experience. Let's check it out. Now, how do we fix it? Like you talked about, our number one go-to is pelvic floor physical therapy. We also do these very mild injections into the musculature. It's a steroid, very mild steroid, just like what they do with like elbows and knees. Same thing. Just to help to relax these muscles. Now, after that, because we relaxed it with medicine, I do recommend, and I have nothing to do with this company, I'm just, the pelvic floor physical therapists love it, especially if you can't go to physical therapy all the time. The little device is called a TheraWand.
Ah, yeah, I've heard of that.
And it helps you to be able to relax, like I'm showing you with my little finger. Make a little hole with your finger. And if you can look at, see what your thumb and your finger meet, it actually looks like these muscles right here. And so you just massage those down after you've done the triggers, or even before, even if you can't get to a physical therapist, this is the way. This vaginal dilators can also be useful. Especially if, you know, you do the TheraWand and it's working, but then you try sex, it's still tense. This is when you just want to put a dilator in there, watch an episode of something, do that every evening and work your way up to the larger, more physiologically sized dilators if you're a person who has sex with a man or somebody with a larger toy or whatever. So just sit that in there, let it sit every day. And then when you do want to try intercourse, and this is, we're talking about cisgendered, male-female partnered sex, female superior position can be a lifesaver because you can control how much goes in opposed to, you know, vaginal rear entry or traditional missionary. Either, like female superior is a good go-to. If you're really tired, then laying on the side, that's also another position that can be fairly comfortable. So I do recommend those two. TheraWand, triggers, physical therapy. So we have a lot to offer.
Yes, those are all good options. I'm going to add them all to the show notes too, because I feel like those
thank you. That'd be great. Yeah.
Perfect. And then I guess how early would you suggest being like, okay, like you're still recovering versus it's a problem. Like now let's start to treat it.
If after the first handful of times you're having sex and if you still feel daggers, that tells us that maybe this is a persistent problem with those muscles and we need to do something about them.
Okay. That's helpful. That also tracks, I feel like, with my experience, the first time I had sex after my second baby, I was like, oh, that was tender it was like a little tender and then it was like fine versus like with my first baby, if it was dagger for the next 11 months, it just wasn't changing. Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you, but I'm so glad that we're talking about this because then hopefully we can reach other women who are going through this and they won't have to suffer for almost like a whole year.
Oh, God.
This type of pain.
And it's interesting, we won't digress too much, but it's not just suffering in sex. Like your relationship also suffers. I remember like my husband couldn't understand like what I was going through, even though I was explaining it, but if there's no way for him to think it's not about him. And I'm like, it is not about you. It's just so not about you. And so there's so many other things that happen when you're having painful sex that it's just like, let's nip it in the bud. Like these things are addressable. This does not have to be your new normal.
Exactly. Now, one little item, since we're touching on that, I went to Loyola University Chicago and I trained under, all the medical students get a chance to rotate through Dr. Damina Renshaw's clinic, which is a clinic specifically for the sexual dysfunction. And she trained with Masters and Johnson. So it goes all the way back. We recommend an exercise called Sensate Focus.
Okay.
For relationship building. It's almost like one of those trust exercises that you do if you ever took an acting class. So since we're talking, have a podcast in LA, lots of people took acting classes where you have to do the mime thing. You have to connect with your person in front of you. That helps even if you're not able to have any sex, you're able to start to reconnect with your partner. And there's many steps to it. I'm not going to go over all of them, but it's certainly something that you guys can just look up, see if that's something you might want to add. If we're still trying to address the painful sex issue, you can't have sex just yet, there's other things that you can do in order to still bolster that feeling of a relationship.
Yeah, no, that is a good thing to add. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I have two last questions. This one might be short, but I'm curious, are orgasms harder to come, like harder to come by after having a baby?
Okay, done.
Answer short. No. So if they are, there's an issue, right?
Yeah, it's a one word answer. Okay. Absolutely not. Even in the book, I actually talk a little bit about, there have been some anecdotal tales of women who have had an orgasmic birth. Now, they're not going to do a whole lot of study on this. It would be wonderful if they did. But there have been some case series of midwives reporting women who do experience this intense feeling of pleasure around that, just at the crowning of the baby's head. We do know that the G-spot is real. Dr. Graffenberg's area is, if you put your finger in your vagina and go come here with your, like, your little pointy finger, and you bend it like you're telling somebody to come here, you can find your G-spot. And of course, as your baby's head is going through that,
they're going to touch that.
It's really touching it. Yeah, I really think those case reports do hold water. I really think they're real. That is just my opinion. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we're not going to do research on it. And we also do know that you will probably have more orgasms during pregnancy because you have a lot more blood flow going to that area. Am I right? Oh, yeah. It actually can increase the intensity of your orgasms during pregnancy. And it's certainly not going to hurt anything after.
Got it. That's good. So if you're having, I will say, I think like what ends up, if you have pelvic floor dysfunction, then you might have a harder time finding an orgasm. And so that's just another indicator. If you're having a hard time, that means your muscles are not syncing and like you should see someone. That's just
exactly.
Because you do not need to have sex without an orgasm.
No.
No one should.
Everybody deserves a mind-blowing orgasm.
Exactly.
Or two or three.
Yes. Yes. Amen. Okay. My last question is, what are some of the most common questions that you get from women at their 6-week appointment?
The most common question I get is, when am I going to feel normal again?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
especially people with, you know, they're having some difficulty in the relationship. You just had a baby. You can't sleep. Everybody's a little bit miserable, especially with your first kid. It's a big, massive life adjustment. And I let them know, physiologically, it usually takes about 2 months. Maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. But we were talking how your vagina is going to look and feel, like we talked about, generally a couple months, maybe three. Now, when it comes to feeling utterly and completely normal, it really depends. It depends on how you're feeling in your relationship. It depends on how things are going with your brand new kid. So there's a whole lot. And then on top of that, think about this. It may never be your pre-baby normal. It could be your new normal. That new normal with you and your kid and this wonderful thing that you were able to do might actually be better than your old normal.
Yeah. So true. So true. It's forget because I'm 18 months out, but it is that like first 6 weeks is just an all out assault.
Yeah. C-section or vaginal, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You're not sleeping. You're, especially with your first kid, you're just like, I have no idea what's going on. We're like trying to find a new groove and this is not my life anymore. And day right? 24 hours and I just, what is happening? And so I think that's not surprising. That's the most common question you get. And you're like, I'm going to be a little bit of a therapist right now.
Yeah, I do. Just more about recognizing what you did and embracing that, because we tend to put a lot of pressure on ourselves to be perfect, be like utterly perfect. I'm going to have a perfect baby. Then I'll have a perfect, and I have a perfect delivery. My kid's going to be perfect. And I'm just going to pop back up and I'm going to be a size 8. Nothing ever happened. It's a nice goal, but it's just that. It's to just be a goal. We put too much on ourselves sheesh, you had a baby. You helped create and bring new life into this world. And we need to appreciate our moms a lot more for that and help them remove that perfection stress that we all suffer from.
Yep. Yep. On that note, I so appreciate your time today. This was very educational, and I feel like it was so helpful for all of our probably later stage pregnant women and early postpartum. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course. It is my pleasure. And you have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay, that's all for today. If you liked today's episode, please share it with a mama friend and leave us a review. If you're pregnant, postpartum, or trying to conceive, you can download the Juna app completely free for 7 days. The app is available for iOS and Android and is designed to be your guide for all things health and fitness for this very special time of your life. If you have any suggestions for episodes you would like to hear or anyone you think would be a great guest on the show, please email me directly at sarah@juna.co. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.